Hey, welcome, Robin. Welcome to East Lake Church. We call this a church for everyone, and that is certainly something everyone can relate to, is having regrets. We're in this series, I like it, called Starting Over, basically talking about how do we get past regrets. And the definition that we said last week is a regret is just something that I wish never happened. So you can break it down into different ways, but just, you know, the things in my life that I wish never happened. And our theme in the series is that you can start over and get over any and all regrets. So there isn't a category of them or a type of regret that I've gone through or a distance that it is from today that Jesus can't help me get beyond it. And a lot of starting over is being able to get past the things in my life that I regret, that I don't feel so good about. And we broke it into three different categories. Last week we had three different buckets, and we said even though we have specific regrets and they're very unique to our lives, my story, they're special to me, but you can put them in these three different buckets. One bucket is the regrets I have because of the things that I did. So that's me, that's on me, things that I said, money I spent, jobs I blew up, relationships I blew up. It's like regrets that happened in my life because of something that I did. Now on the other side is the regrets in my life because of something I didn't do. So I should have went to college, I wish I had, but I didn't. You know, I should have made an investment, should have taken a risk, you know, should have introduced myself, put myself out. Anything in my life that I look back on, it could have been a long time ago or not too long ago, and I say, I wish I would have done that, but I didn't do it. That's a regret. And then the third thing, completely different, is the things that happened to me. So the economy breaks up, my parents get divorced, someone in my family dies. You know, we have to move when I'm a teenager and I wasn't ready for it. It's just like, the things in my life, I didn't have anything to do. I didn't make a choice. Nobody else made a choice. Something happened to me, and I regret that. And I wish it would have never happened. And sometimes regrets, they don't always have to be super, super sad. You know, you can have a regret in your life and look back on it, and it can be funny now, and sometimes it isn't. And it never becomes funny. It's always too tender. And last week, I read you some regrets from a website, mysecretregrets.com. And I brought a few more I want to read you today. These are from this website. You can go there, you know, mysecretregrets.com. Listen to some of these. I regret letting my anger towards my mom take over my life, driving a wedge between us. And then I took it out on others. My parents divorced, and 2 months later, I found out via Facebook my mom had gotten married to someone new. Then a month later, she moved across the country. I regret not going to college when I was in my 20s. I didn't think I could do it with two little kids and no family to support me. I raised my children in poverty. I regret not having more courage. I started school when I was 42, and I'm 46 and not sure anyone will ever hire me now, no matter how good of grades I get. My regret is becoming so objective and cynical. I put work and tasks before people, and I know that it hurt them. I work on it now, but I'm far too rational of a person. I say that she brought in too much baggage to our relationship, but I know my last relationship ended because I ripped her to shreds in our last fight, trying to find a way to win the fight. I overthink everything. When you go to that website, and people have made these anonymous regrets, and it's just gut-wrenching to read them. And the good news in this series is that even though we all go through it, that you can start over, you can get over, and regrets don't have to be a finish line. That's the great news. They can be a starting line. They don't have to be where something ends and gets stuck. It's where something great can begin. A closer walk with God can begin. Now this week, we're talking about the very first step. And so grab your notes if you would. The big idea this week, the first step is recognizing my regrets. You know, being able to see my regrets. Being willing to stop and just know that they're there. They happened. When you have regrets in your life, you know, you kind of want to back away from them. You don't want to deal with them. And you almost try to pretend that they're not there. But what we're saying in this series is the very first step, the way you turn it into a starting line, is just step number one, just be willing to recognize them. Now I brought a little illustration today I want to show you, kind of like a way of looking at regrets is this, and we've all done this before. Everybody's been in a pool or at the beach or the lake, and you've had a beach ball, and you thought it was so fun to play with it, and at some point, You take the beach ball, and the big challenge begins, how long can I keep it under the water? And so you have the beach ball like this underneath the water. You keep it as long as you can. Maybe several people have a beach ball. Who can keep it under the water the longest? And it starts getting squirrely. And no matter what, at some point, that beach ball is coming out of the water. And that's really what a regret is like when you try to hide it. You can put a lot of energy into it. You can force it down there, and you can really try to make sure that you keep it down there, but it's not natural. And at some point, that regret is coming up. And they can pop up at the worst times. You go through a divorce, and you think you get things settled, and then you have this regret, and you find someone different. It looks like it's going to be awesome, and you're in this different relationship, and pops the old regrets. And they have voices. It's just going to be like last time. You're no different. You don't even know how to pick the right person. And the regrets come up. And it's normal to want to hide from them. I mean, nobody likes to face them. I mean, nobody likes to admit that they're there. We just try to get rid of it. And there's different ways that we do it. And I wrote some down. You can put it in your notes. You know, different ways that we try to hide from our regrets. And that's option number one. I mean, two options you can do. You can try to hide from them. And here's some ways that we do it. Number one is denial. So this is when I try to get to the place that it doesn't even matter that it occurred. My parents got divorced when I was really super, super young, and I never really saw my dad. And, when you grow up without a dad, there's no dad around. People ask you where your dad is. And I just tried to convince myself that it didn't matter. I tried to make it okay to not have a dad. I got so good at it that I forgot that there even was a dad in my life. And maybe you have something in your life, and the way you've dealt with it is you just don't deal with it. You hide from it. You get to the place where you won't even acknowledge it. It's almost like you could erase it, but you can't because it's underneath the surface and it's down there, and it takes some effort from time and time to not admit it, and then it'll pop up at the worst time. I was in Boy Scouts, and they had the night where the dads came and with their sons, and everybody had, and my dad wasn't there, and I'd kept that beach ball down. There it was. Where's your dad? And, all I could say was, I don't have a dad. Well, where is he? I never had a dad. The stork brought me. you try anything you can to try to, it didn't happen. What do you deny in your life? You just try to erase it right out? You want to keep that beach ball down and you just don't want to look at it or face it? It's a regret. It's something I wish didn't happen. And the second thing you can write down is distractions. And maybe you're good at this. You get a good job. You get friends. You get hobbies. You do anything you can. You look forward to hunting season. You look forward to schoolwork. You investing money. You do anything you can to distract yourself from the things that you regret in life. You pile up work. Anything that I'm doing to try to make me not recognize that there's something in my life I wish hadn't happened. And, they can be healthy distractions. They can be unhealthy distractions. Some people like dive into Netflix for like 27 days straight. And I just like those shows. It's just like a distraction. Some people use food. There's lots of different things. Some things are really super healthy. Some of the people in the helping professions, nurses, doctors, counselors, at some point they realize, wow, I help other people with their problems to distract me from my own. Distraction. And number three is dance around. Now, this is mine. I became a master at dancing around the issues. Coming up with anything I could to not have to face it. Somebody comes by, and imagine if I'm standing here and someone says, are you holding a beach ball under the world? And look, it's underneath the water. And here's what I say. It's like, have you seen those Jazz? Man, they're in fourth place. What are you doing this weekend? Hey, have I told you about, you're holding it there, but you're distracting every way you possibly can to not have to see it or for anybody else to see it. You put distractions in your life. You try to distract yourself and distract other people. And those are different ways that we I'm going to distract them. I'm going to dance around it. I'm going to deny. There's this great story in the Bible 4,000 years ago, there was a family, and in this family, there was a young man named David. So now, hey, remember now, when you leave today, if you don't have a Bible, grab one at the free table. You can grab that and read stories in there. It's not hard to read. But maybe you've heard of him, David and Goliath. Even to this day, his name survives because people say, oh, that was a David and Goliath. There was actually a person named David. Now, Israel at that time was ruled by a king. It was a kingdom, and so kings were a really, really big thing. And there was a family that, like most kings, you know, the son becomes a king. There's a lineage, and, you know, king after king after king. And these kings got worse and worse and worse in Israel. They didn't follow God. They used people. They used authority to benefit themselves only. They didn't take care of others. As an aside, if you're a manager or you have an authority position somewhere, God gave you that for the benefit of others, not just you. So you could have more money, so you could not have to do the dirty work. You have that position. God gave you that position so you could be a benefit to other people. He saw something in you. He said, I think I could trust them with the position. Well, these kings, they'd completely lost that. And so God interrupts the whole thing, which he can do. It's his story. He authored it. He interrupts the whole thing. And he decides he's going to make a completely different, like, he's going to change everything. He picks a new king out of a new family, and it's David. He's a young man. He's a shepherd. A shepherd would be like being a computer programmer or a manager at, you know, a store. I mean, it was just an average, everyday job in those days. And he picks David to be the king, and you know, David does these amazing things. When God chooses you, he always gives you the power to fulfill what he's chosen you for. So here's David. He comes up against giants, and he's not a soldier, but he automatically becomes a king and this general. If you're involved in anything right now in your life and you look at it and go, whoa, this is too big for me. I can't do this. Have you cried out to God? David got good at that, and he's like, God, I can't do this. And God said, I know. That's why I picked you. You haven't forgotten that. But we can do it together. And he does this amazing, like, he gets all this territory back for his. He's just awesome. And as he gets more and more powerful and he becomes longer the king, he starts to get comfortable in his Achilles heel, which he's always had all his life. He has a wandering eye for women. How many times have we seen that with men that get into authority? His wandering eye. He gets married and he can't keep it at home. And his eyes wander and he runs off with another girl. And David is the king, so he can make whatever laws he wants. So he just decides that it's okay to have more than one wife. So he has like two wives and three wives, and you know, he just this story, you know, evolves to the place where David basically takes any woman that he wants. And there's a woman named Bathsheba, and her husband is Uriah. He's a soldier in David's army. And she lives, and Uriah lives fairly close to David's house, and she's bathing outside. The story doesn't say why. You fill in the blanks. She's bathing outside, and David sees her from his house, and you wonder, is that a coincidence? Bathing outside at just the right time. David sees her, and he's like, whoa. If you're a man, and you're at work, or you're someplace, and there's a girl there, and it makes you go, whoa. That's normal. What you do next and what you do with that, that's your choice. And in our culture, it's very normal to go, I wonder if I just push that direction a little bit, and David does, and Bathsheba, for whatever reason, maybe she's flattered, maybe she's intimidated. In our culture, it would be called power differential. He's using his authority in a way that he shouldn't. He could go to prison for that, but not then. He's the king. And so she and him have a one-night stand together. And David's thinking, this is not that big a thing. I'm sure he had regrets, though. He's probably trying to push it down. I'm the king, and nobody's going to know. It's not that big a thing. Until she sends him a note and says, I'm pregnant. And up comes the regret. And David's like, pregnant? What? He's clever, though. He calls for Uriah to come back from the battlefield. And Uriah's surprised. He's like, why would David be calling me back? Have I done something wrong? And he comes back to the palace, and David has a banquet ready. And he's alcohol there, and he says, Uriah, you're like one of my great soldiers, and I just wanted to compliment you and throw you a feast. I wanted to give you honor. And Uriah, he's weirded out by these. He's like, David, all the other, my brothers, my soldiers are sleeping out in tents. He goes, there's not even hardly any food out there. It's cold. I mean, I shouldn't be here. And David says, well, I'm the king, and I've called you. And Uriah's very uncomfortable with it. And then David tells him, he says, I've given you a two-day leave, a pass. You can go home and be with your wife, Bathsheba. And Uriah's like, I can't do that. I said, all the other soldiers are out there. I'm a fighter, man. I'm supposed to be back on the front lines. And David says, no, go home. And so Uriah goes home and sleeps on the porch. Do you have that kind of discipline? If you walk with God, you could have it. If it's partnered with him. Can you imagine if you were a soldier and you've been away from your wife for months and months and months and the king comes home, you're welcome to go home and sleep with your wife. Would you be able to sleep on the porch? You'd be like, oh, dang. And then even the little voice might say to you, well, you really shouldn't do that. But the other voice would say, he is the king and she is naked. He sleeps on the porch. David finds out the next morning, he's like on the porch. You can't have sex with your wife on the porch. And so he's like frustrated. You know, he's trying to keep it down. And like all beach balls, it's getting away from him. You know, he can't hold it. It's trying to get away. So then he calls Uriah and he hands him an envelope. And inside the envelope is a death wish. He writes a note to the general. Put Uriah, this is all a true story in the Bible. Sounds like a soap opera on TV, huh? This is a true story. Grab the Bible. It's better than 50 Shades of Purple or whatever. There's some great stories in there. And he sends the note to the general, put Uriah on the front lines, and when the fighting becomes the fierce, true story, pull back. So Uriah's killed. So now David's got the underneath again. And sure enough, it happens. And then to cover all it up, he takes Bathsheba into his home and marries her. He says, well, now everybody will just think it's cool. It's just going to be my child, and so everything's fine. So now he's got the beach ball back underneath. But look in your notes. I want to read to you what happens next. Because David's a king, but he forgets that there's another king. Have you ever done that before? You're like, oh, and then you just totally forget, like, God's here. Listen to what God does. He picks a man. The Lord sent Nathan to David. Nathan's a religious leader. When he came to him, he said, there were two men in a certain town. So he tells him a story to David. One rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb who he had bought. He raised it. It grew up with him and his children. He shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Can you imagine? You don't have to raise your hand, but like just say it. So who has a daughter here, little tiny daughter? You know what she's like to you. We had a foster daughter. I had two boys. We had a foster daughter coming home, and everybody says, you can wrap you around your fingers. Not me. She had me wrapped around her fingers so fast. Who has a daughter? They're making a point in this story. Like a daughter to him. Shared his food, drank from his cup, even slept in his arm. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle prepare a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. So you got it? So a rich man who's got everything over here goes to the poor man who treats the little lamb like a daughter and takes that little lamb, that daughter, from him and prepares it instead of using out of all of his wealth. Nathan comes and tells the story to David. David's probably thinking, where is he going with this? Or maybe what he's thinking is, wow, Nathan doesn't visit me that much, and why is he telling me this story? Have you ever been watching something or someone's been saying something and it's starting to hit close to home? And you can feel the beach ball starting to get away a little bit? Maybe that's where David was. Now listen to David. Now listen to David dance around a little bit. Boy, he's been dancing, hadn't he? He said, you know, come on home and sleep with your wife. Well, that didn't work. Now, lust, adultery, murder. So now it's growing. He's been dancing. So let's see what David says. David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, "As surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for the lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity." Man, he pushes it down as far as it could go. Maybe you've done this before. You've seen somebody and their self-righteousness come up and make it look so bad. He's like, "That guy's going to pay." And if you're watching this on TV right now, I'm sure Nathan, like your wife, is like a soap opera. This would be the time when Nathan takes a really deep breath, and then they go to commercial. You know, it's like, because it's hanging in the air. Nathan has to say something. David's the most powerful man. He knows he can just, with a move of his hand, wipe him out. Now listen to what Nathan says to David. "Then Nathan said to David, 'You are the man.'" See, it'll always come up. It'll always come up. It just up it comes. "You are the man." Deny it, distract it, dance around. "You are the man." There's no more dancing for David now. No more denying it. God, in an act of incredible mercy, reaches for David in a very extreme way. If God ever exposes you, it's because he loves you. I've left him no options. It's like when I knew a bunch of Navy pilots, and they'd always tell me, if you ever have to eject out of the jet, it's because the Navy says your life is worth more than the jet. They realize it's a lot of money crashing. And when God ever has to do something, like he's reaching in a very extreme way, it's not to be mean to you or beat you up. It's because he loves you. He's like, "Man, I cannot get through to David. This guy is way out there. You are the man." And listen to David. For the first time, the dancing stops, the denial stops, the distractions stop. "Then David said to Nathan, 'I've sinned against the Lord.'" Finally. Oh, there is another king. Finally. "Okay, God. You can hide and hide and hide." Finally, David decides, and it's option number two, to face. And what we're saying in this series is it can be a starting line to something much better. Whatever your regrets are, it can be a starting line to something much better. Step number one, you have to face them. I have to face them. David had to face them. And I know that's not normal. We don't want any. If you tattoo regret on your arm and you spell it wrong, you don't want anybody to see that. And maybe our regrets don't show on the outside, but a lot are tattooed on my heart, and I don't want anybody to see that. I don't want anybody to know that. I don't want to know it anymore. But they stay under the surface, and then they come up at the worst times ever. You are the man. And David finally decides to face it. And here's why we can. I know on ourselves it's difficult, but I just want to read you how God is with us. This is out of the Psalms. "God is our protection and source of strength. He's always ready to help us." I love that. He's always ready to help us. He doesn't stand back and says, "Whoa, you caused this, man. This is your mess. You made your bed, you'll sleep in it." That's a neat proverb, but God never says that. He says, "I will always be ready to help in times of trouble. So we're not afraid when the earth quakes and the mountains fall into the sea. We're not afraid when the seas become rough and dark and the mountains tremble. The Lord Almighty is with us." Now, there's different ways to interpret what David says. I'm just going to give you mine. I think what he said is when he said, "I've sinned against the Lord," I think he finally got to the place where he's like, "Lord, I can't hide anymore. I can't run anymore. I'm in trouble. Look what I've done, God. Look, this is a regret. I'm done." And when you're done is when you can begin. Now, right in your notes, to be honest with God is where you start. And a lot of people, it's easy to get this mixed up. Sometimes it feels like I should be honest with myself first. But let me tell you, if you get honest with yourself first, that's psychology. If you try to look at your life first and you, what are my regrets? If you do that first before you go to God, you will stay stuck because you will never see the power in yourself that's enough. So the first place we always go is we start with God. We have a talk with God. You go be with him somehow and you say, God, I need to talk to you. I have something that's happened. I did it. They did it. It happened. And then the second thing is to be honest with myself, and that's not easy. And right alongside that, just write your notes. Just write this. Just here's all we're trying to get to. It happened. That's all. I just be honest with myself. It happened. And then the last one is to be honest with someone else, and that's really what this place is about. One of the reasons East Lake Church is here is so there'd be a group of people that we could grow with. Do you know, you don't just automatically grow spiritually. You don't mature. You don't get better at relationships, become more forgiving, more tolerant, more patient. That just doesn't happen. We participate in the growth, and it always happens in the area that is difficult. Regrets are the place that you can really grow. But it's difficult if you don't have people with you. If you don't have something with God and you're not honest with yourself, it's very difficult to be honest with anybody else. That's what East Lake is about. We're hoping it'd be a place where people could understand and be with each other and say, listen, we've all got our stuff. Now, here's the bottom line. And write this in. We can't change the past, but we can make a choice about the future. And here's what it says in the Bible. So humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and at the right time when we lift up, he will lift you up in honor. Give all your worries and cares to God, for he cares for you. The bottom line, I can't change the past, but I can do something about the future. We all have regrets. And our tendency, it's normal to want to keep them underneath and hide from them. But if we bring them to God, if we're willing to face them with him, they can actually be a starting line to something way, way better. And that is a step of humility. It is the willingness to say, like David, I'm done. In this area of my life, I'm done.